Hi, you've tuned in to the Lovely Travels podcast, where we talk about all things travel and adventure. My name is Emma Lovell, also known as Lovely, and I have a mission to visit every UN-recognised country in the world while raising awareness for mental health. Join me as we revisit some of my past adventures, speak to fellow travellers and interesting locals, all while following the journey to 195 countries. I'll be joined soon by my co-pilot, Darius, in Germany. And sometimes we're even going to hit the road together. Make sure to join in the adventure by following me on Instagram, Lovely Travels. You can also join our Facebook group, Lovely Travels Community, and learn more about us at the website, lovelytravels.com. But for now, it's listening time. Travel vicariously along with us. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Lovely Travels podcast. We have a different one today. It's just me. It's one of the rare ones with just me, but I have a bit of a story to tell, and I wanted to share this one personally. So this is my birth story episode. And before I start, I would like to respectfully acknowledge the Yugambeh people, the traditional owners of the land on which I work and live. And I pay my respect to elders, past, present, and emerging. So, yes, here I am in the Gold Coast, in my home. It's 10 o'clock, full disclosure, and my husband is currently feeding our five-month-old. So our son, Finn William Quick, was born on the 12th of January, 2021. His birth date is 12121, which I think is the coolest birthday ever. We did actually get to choose it because I had an elective abdominal birth, which I will get to. And so it's a pretty unique date, a palindrome, if you will. And that's a fun fact. Darius will enjoy that. And birth is kind of one of the greatest journeys of all. And so although this isn't a travel topic, Finn, my son, like I said on my pregnancy episode, Finn will be a huge part of my life and is a huge part of my life and will be coming on future travels with me. This podcast won't turn into just kids and travel, but certainly it's something we'll address, and family travel is quite different and will be quite different to some of the travels I've done in the past. But also this podcast has a mission. My mission is to visit every UN-recognised country in the world, according to the UN list, which is 193. But it's also to raise awareness for mental health and to normalise talking about our mental well-being. So I do have a personal history with mental illness. I've had depression and anxiety. And if you listened to my pregnancy episode, you would have heard that I felt like I was dipping back into depression. You would call it antenatal depression with the pregnancy. I did go and see a psychologist, and they said they didn't think that I was quite there. I have a very good awareness around my own mental health, sometimes maybe too aware, and that could have appeared like I had it. So, but you know, going into the birth, it was really a high probability that I could have experienced postnatal depression, which, you know, we didn't used to know about, and now it's pretty it's common. It is normal for some people to experience that. I don't know if we want to use the word normal and natural and those words around pregnancy and birth, because it's so unique. Though I was reading a book recently called The Motherhood by Jamila Rizvi, and which is brilliant, by the way. It's letters from well-known Australian women to themselves with a six-week-old. So what would you have told yourself before? Or what would you tell, you know, reaching out to in the trenches of having a six-week-old, what would you have wanted to have told to yourself? And it was really beautiful and loving and kind. Anyway, in the opening of the book, in the introduction, it says motherhood is the most normal thing in the world, or the most common thing in the world, and it's also the most unique. And that's, I found that very true to my experience. You know, there's so many women who've done it, obviously. It's how we babies get here, we people get here. But it's also no woman's story is the same. No circumstances can be the same. You could even have similar, but nobody will have walked the path that you have walked or will walk. And, you know, your relationship with your child would be very unique. So anyway, because I struggled so much with the pregnancy, there was a real fear in me and, you know, quite a concern. I've heard from a number of people in my around me, family and friends, and even my psychologist, and, you know, they had a, that people were keeping an eye on me, they were ready. And I actually had really good support in place for the, you know, possibility that I was going to struggle. And honestly, I thought that in having my son, I knew from 20 weeks that he was a boy, actually. But I didn't know how I was going to cope. And I thought that I would probably enjoy him more when he was between 4 to 6 months old. And actually, what has surprised and delighted me, and I will get to, I'll go back a little bit, is how much I have loved and enjoyed so much of the experience and so much of him from day one. And that's not the case for everyone. And I was very well aware that it might not have been the case for me. So I believed that those early weeks would be a struggle and really hard, and they were in different ways. It was unexpected. I think it's something that you really you don't know what to expect. So this is my story. I am sharing it openly and honestly. I'm using language that I've learned through hypnobirthing, language that I feel is more respectful of more women's journeys. If you have had a child personally, I hope that this resonates or helps you in some way. And if it doesn't and it's not your story, that's okay. I think we can try and acknowledge and respect everybody's journey as individual, everybody's choices as individual, and that really we're just trying to do the best for ourselves, for our families, for our children. If we could all acknowledge that, I think these journeys would be made a lot easier. So if this is triggering in any way for you, I hope that you seek support and seek help. You know, for some women, even it could be years later, and hearing somebody else go through something can bring back those memories. So if that's you, journal, reach out to a friend, acknowledge it yourself, reach out to a professional if you feel that's needed. But, you know, it's okay to, reflect on your story and to have your own story. And this is mine. So here we go. I'm going to start from the day of my son's birth. So I had chosen to have an elective, I elected to have an abdominal birth. An abdominal birth in most people's language would be the cesarean. I choose to call it an abdominal birth because you can have two types of birth. You can have a vaginal birth or an abdominal birth. They either come out the front door or the sunroof. So my son was to come out the sunroof. And I chose that early on because it's just really what I wanted. It's really what I felt was best for me. Some people said I could have said that I chose that because of I had a broken back when I was 22, and that could have been a medical reason why. Maybe that was the way to talk about it. I didn't need that, and I didn't feel comfortable with it. It could have been true, but it didn't matter. It was my choice, and I'm very blessed to live in Australia, to live in a country where I have a choice. I'm very blessed to have the financial means to have a private obstetrician, because that is something that was required in order to make that choice. If it's not medically suggested, then you need to have a private obstetrician. And I also chose to have my son in a private hospital, which wasn't a requirement. If you have a private obstetrician, it is possible to have a abdominal birth in a public hospital with a private obstetrician. But I have heard of other women, other friends going through labor and ending up with an abdominal birth as well. So I chose to take the known risk, and really honestly, all birth is a risk. As I said before, I really don't like the term natural. There are so many things involved in the bringing of a child into the world, and it is inherently risky and inherently dangerous, to be honest. It's literally life and death, and it's hopefully most of the time life. So to remove some of the anxiety from myself, and I think mental health should be involved in a choice, making that decision, knowing that all along, being able to plan as best as I could for that and be prepared mentally, it helped me a lot. And so I'd talked to friends, I'd gone through a hypnobirthing course with the Mindful Birth Group, which I highly recommend looking at, TMBG. They're on Instagram, brilliant. Emiliana runs that. I loved the course. I did the audio version. I really enjoyed having relaxation audios and some wonderful little mantras. I've still got one on my wall, which says, I only let in positive thoughts about birth. I read positive birth stories about abdominal births, learned about recovery from friends. I talked to my physios. I had a lot of things in place. That's still not to say that something could have gone wrong. That's still not to say I could have gone into labor early. There's still so many different variations, but the plan was, and my obstetrician walked me through it very clearly. The plan was to go in very early in the morning. They prep you for about an hour, get you set up in your room, take you to where the anaesthetist is. That's a hard word to say. And then take you, once you've had all that, go into surgery, and that part would be very quick, and then fix me up and send me out. So, I had sort of visualized that quite a bit. I'd, as I said, read about it, talked to my obstetrician, and one of the things that I really loved about my birth was the consistency of care. So having the same obstetrician throughout, and even, she may not have been on call, but being able to meet other people at the same obstetrician office, knowing where the hospital was and having visited there to visit the obstetrician, having done, and I was very fortunate even with COVID, because some people didn't get this opportunity, but I did get to do a hospital tour. So I got to see the rooms and see where I was going to go. So I really could visualize it. They showed me where they take you through for theatre, all those sorts of things. So that really helped. Another thing that really helped me was having a playlist. So one of the hypnobirthing techniques is to have a playlist, and that playlist could be applicable for labor or for the abdominal birth. I made a playlist of songs that just made me happy. So some of the songs were definitely not, all Enya and relaxation. Some of them were, I had things from anywhere from Celine Dion to Bollywood to reggaeton to there's a new song at the moment by Sigala and James someone, Lasting Lover. Really different music, and they were just songs that if they come on, they would put me at ease. And I started playing that for about 4 days before I went in for the surgery. So it's a funny thing. It's both anxiety reducing and also a little bit anxiety inducing knowing the date. As I said before, I still could have gone into labor, so it might not have ended up being that date, but it's a funny thing knowing tomorrow I'm going to wake up and I'm going to have a baby. And the day before was really, really strange, surreal. It was kind of a normal day, but it was also like really intense. And I actually, you know, full disclosure, I cracked it pretty severely at my husband. We went out. I just really wanted a chocolate thick shake. It was just something I wanted. I don't know. Pregnancy perks. And I had wanted to go earlier for a walk, and I'd even thought about going for a walk on the beach, and just hadn't happened. The day just went away, and I wanted some time together. I wanted to do something nice. It just really felt like that was our last day as us. I just cracked it at him. We were in the car, and I just said, like, how are you treating this like a normal day? Like, today is not a normal day. This is the last day of our lives as we know it. Which sounds very dramatic, and I said it pretty dramatically, but that's how I felt. We would, after that day, not think the same. We wouldn't feel the same. And I fundamentally believe that we are who we are. And I really fought fiercely during my pregnancy to hold on to my identity. I think I've done well to continue reconnecting back to me, Emma, throughout. But it was a new chapter in our lives that was starting, and we didn't know how we were going to feel or what it was going to be like. And for me, it was that unknown that was coming that brought up a lot of fear, but also just very realistic. I was very realistic about the fact that our lives were going to change dramatically. And you know, more often than not, people have said for the better, and that, you know, you can't imagine your life without your child once you have them. But, you know, before, I really liked my life. I really liked the things I did, and I didn't know what elements would continue and what elements wouldn't. And that's not always because you don't want things to continue. Some things can't continue or have to change. And then sometimes you want things to change and you don't want the things that you wanted before. So again, didn't know how it was going to be. And I had a pretty severe talking and then reflection. And, you know, they do say that a lot of people say it's harder for men to grasp, and like, they haven't had the experience of growing a child. But it was something that we struggled with throughout, and I'm very, you know, I have full permission of my husband to speak honestly and openly about our relationship and what we've been through as a couple, not just me. And I think it's something that isn't discussed enough, what a change you go through together. So I do understand that it's harder for men to feel it, but, you know, that's also empathy. That's empathy being, you don't, just because you haven't experienced something yourself or won't ever experience something yourself doesn't mean that you can't empathize with somebody and try to understand how they're feeling. And I think for my husband, Matthew, he really was kind of like, once the baby's here and once it's happening, then it will be reality. And that's, you know, that's true. And regardless of how prepared you can be, you never know how you're going to feel after. But I think some more preparation and understanding of what a life change is going to be could have helped us a bit more. It would have certainly helped me to be not quite so aggressive. So anyway, the night before, we had everything ready. We'd had things ready. You know, I say ready in inverted commas. We were never really ready. But I had the room was all set. Bags were all packed. We had a list of things we had to pick up in the morning. Clothes were out that we were going to wear to the hospital. House was sorted. Somebody was going to come in and stay and feed the cat and everything. My mum was going to come and stay. So that was all planned, all the instructions, you know. I'm pretty organized, apparently. I don't think I am, but apparently I am. And, yeah, we went and sat in Finn. Well, his name is now Finn. We know that. But we went and sat in our future child's room and I just took photos and videos of it because it was never going to look the same again. Probably a little tad messier, but it was just perfect and ready for him. And I loved the way it came out. And I said, let's do a little video message to him. It still makes me feel like crying. Yeah, and I just said, I get to see you tomorrow. You know, it was so surreal. Like, okay, I'm going to go to bed and then I'm going to see you. And I know that it happens really quickly. I have that moment, that message captured in time forever, and it's really beautiful. I'm glad I have that.
This is the day before you're born, and clearly mum can't keep a straight face. I'm very much looking forward to meeting you.
Yeah, I got your bedroom ready. I'll see you tomorrow. We love you already. We look forward to seeing you tomorrow.
Okay. Bye. See you soon.
So it's hard to believe, but we actually did get some sleep. Maybe I got like 6 hours. We had to be awake at 4. We had to be at the hospital at 5 for my surgery at 7. And actually we got a text at like 8 o'clock the night before saying, and I knew I had to fast. I had to fast and actually not have any liquid, which was probably the hardest thing. I drink quite a lot of water and I sip water through the night if I wake up. So the thought of not having anything. So from 8 p.m. they said I wasn't to have anything more. So I did that. Miraculously, I managed to sleep. And both of us are pretty good when we have something to do at getting up. So we were straight up and got ourselves ready and had a little hug with the cat, my first baby, T'Challa. And, yeah, really just had a moment. Again, did some videos before we left, left our apartment, and I really took a lot of photos and videos, and I've made a slideshow video thing, which I might share on the page. We'll see. There's a few gruesome pics in there, so we'll see if I have to edit that. But I made a birthday video, and yeah, just wanted to really document it. Even walking down the stairs, and you know, getting to the hospital, and I was surprisingly calm. And we went into the room and obviously there's nobody there. It's really easy to check in. And we parked the car and Matt's dad was going to pick it up later. And we went to our room and two nurses came and they chatted to us and helped us. And I perched on the side of the bed. You know, I've got this funny photo of me. We both wore I wore my Mama Bear shirt and Matt wore his Papa Bear shirt, which are from SeaWorld with polar bears on them, which the nurses thought were hilarious and cute. And yeah, I had my playlist on starting to get, did the playlist in the car actually as well. So really it's like, kind of zenning out and getting in the zone and just being calm. And it really helped because I played those songs before. So it just helped me to feel in the moment. And they got through the official biz. You know, we even got to choose our meals for when we came out that day, and they showed us how we'd do our menu each day. And so funny because the room, the way it looked when we came in, and then when they next made the room with my hospital bed in there, and then it felt like I was in like 3 different rooms over a few days. And even if I went back to see the room now, it would look surreal. So much happened in that space. So But yeah, they came, another nurse came, she was our midwife came, and actually a junior midwife who I'd met before, which was cool, a training midwife. Nice to see someone I'd seen before. And they said, yeah, if you're ready, we'll take you in now. And it was actually earlier than we planned because I was meant to be at 7:30. And they said, oh, the person that was meant to be before me got moved. So let's, you know, you're ready, let's go. So I walked to the sort of bed area. So it was the last time I walked. They weigh you as well, which was like pretty depressing. last time they weighed me before I went through. And yeah, last time I was going to have that belly. And a lot of people say you miss the belly. I do not miss the belly. The belly contained my son. I'm very happy to have my son. I don't need the belly. But it, you know, it was funny. You've had that for a while and it's weird how quickly you get used to not having it again. I did like the firmness of it. I did like that. I don't know if my belly is going to be that firm again. We'll try, but I don't think so. Yes, yeah, so I went in. They put me on the hospital bed and I was wearing my hospital gown and Matt got put into scrubs and, you know, it was very, you know, we were giggling and taking selfies and things and put on my little stockings to stop blood clots, all very glamorous. And then they wheeled me in and they started to get me, put my, the cannula, the thing in your hand, and met my anaesthetist. His name was James. He was South African. That's not of much importance, but you know me, loving the travel. So I was just chatting to him a bit about South Africa and which was nice again. I very felt very relaxed. And then my obstetrician walked in and it was so comforting to see her face. And I nearly cried and I want to cry now seeing her face. Dr. Adriana Olog, she was the best, just the best throughout the whole thing. She was so wonderful with me not enjoying the pregnancy, just so reassuring and comforting and acknowledging what I was going through, which really meant a lot. And so I had a little chat to her, which was really funny, just lying there having a bit of a chat. She's drinking tea. Again, Matt's snapping away photos. It was all, you know, I was happy. I said, just document it, take photos, and you know, if I don't like them later or if I don't want to see them, I won't look at them. But, you know, who knows? This could be the only time I ever do this, so may as well document it. And then got wheeled into theatre. And there's so many people, you don't realise. There's just so many people, like obstetrician, assistant. I think there's like three people doing the actual surgery. The paediatrician's there ready for the baby, who was also amazing. The midwife, the midwife's the student, the anaesthetist's assistant. There was another nurse who held me, you know, who came and held my shoulders while I got my spinal block. Yeah, just so many people. So they asked me if I had my music and they put that onto a speaker, which is super cool. And yeah, as I was getting my spinal block, the song Infinity came on. It's like an old dance song. It used to be on in the clubs and it's just so funny. The nurse and the anaesthetist were like, oh, tune. And I was like, yeah, I used to listen to this when I was doing running up Heartbreak Hill in the city to surf. Running. I wasn't running. And it was just so strange that, yeah, I'm just sitting there about to have this major thing happen and, again, having chats and pretty relaxed. And, yeah, the spinal block was probably then the scariest part of it, really. But people had said there's two needles, but you get the first needle, which is the local, and actually you feel that, so that the prick hurt. But I think it was more the fear of you can't move, you shouldn't move, and that's why they hold you. And I was bent over, curling, holding a pillow, but Matt took a bunch of photos and you can just see my face, like I'm really focused and really quite concerned. And then you feel this like aching, and I thought that was the, I thought I could feel the anaesthetist pushing around, like pushing my back, but actually that, now I understand that was actually the spinal block going in. There's this big dull ache. But then, yeah, so quickly just the feeling goes and they lay you down and then you're on the table. They transferred me and then I'm on the table. And the curtain went up and they started to well, they put a blanket up and they were starting to get the curtain ready, and just they really moved quickly after that. The anaesthetist kept talking to me the whole way through, running ice over me to see what feeling I had. And I just had this real pause and real moment of like, we're going to meet our baby. This is it. Like, things are never going to be the same again. And I said I might cry while I was doing this, but I just looked at Matt and I started to cry. And I just had to have a cry. I had to let it out. And Matt was crying and the nurses were like, oh, you guys are so beautiful. We're going to cry too. And it was just a lot of love and a lot of emotion. And I'd heard that there's a lot of love in the room. And I think people are very aware that with an elective, with an abdominal birth, they're aware that it's very serious, but they also, everybody's really clear on their job. Everybody knows what's going to happen. If everything goes to plan, everybody's ready to act. And, you know, everybody wants the best for you. Everybody wants the best outcome. They want to see a healthy baby and a healthy mom and a healthy family. So just a lot of love. And it was really nice to just be able to have that moment and have a cry and just be like, wow, okay, it's going to happen. And again, just any feelings I was having, I just kept telling the anaesthetist what I was feeling. And I was really surprised, something that I didn't realize would happen. I thought with the spinal block, I'd feel nothing, but you feel pressure. So you don't feel pain, but you feel pressure. So, you know, they're pushing on you and whatever. And they kind of distract you. A lot's going on. Matt was holding my hand, but your arms are stretched out. You've got tubes and things. And then, yeah, next thing I know, they're saying, okay, let's do this. Ready. And again, the music was just playing and you don't know what's going on. Kept looking to Matt's face and anaesthetist kept telling me what was going on. Not like detail, gruesome details. And I had a rule. I didn't want Matt to look. He would have liked to have looked, but I said, you know, and he said, yeah, I can look. I've seen like a polar bear cut open, you know, from his work. And I said, yeah, likening your wife to a polar bear is a bit, you know, no, it's not the same. And I said, no, I don't want you to see my insides, please. So he stayed up right next to my face with me. And before we knew it, the obstetrician said, okay, 2 minutes to go, get her song ready. And that was really lovely. One of my preferences was to have a song played, and the song I'd chosen, not everyone's going to be a fan, but I'm a huge fan, was Celine Dion, I'm Alive. And so they said, get the song ready. Okay, 30 seconds to go. And I was just so weird, like knowing, and I was just looking at Matt, looking at the curtain. We were going, and then she says, okay, and drops the curtain, and it's like literally a light shining behind him. And she held him up, and I saw him moving straight away, which was such a relief. And then a few seconds later, he's belted out a cry, and just the music playing and the light, and then holding Matt, and we're just bawling our eyes out, and it's just like, he's there. That's my child. That's our baby. It was so surreal. And straight away they take him, you know, once they'd held him up and they got photos, and one of the nurses took photos for us, which was so incredible. I'm so glad we did that. As I said, I said, take them. And if I don't like them later, I can always not look at them. But they're really clever, and they do this all the time. So they're really good at taking pictures. And like I said, so much love in the room. And they put a screen up above my a TV screen up above my head, so I could watch what was happening on the table while they did the checks on Finn. Matt got to go over and hold his little finger and look down on him and see what was happening. And you know, I looked over, even though I could have looked up at the video, I liked looking over to my right and seeing Matt's little finger, the whole finger holding Finn. And, you know, they said the whole process took about half an hour or 40 minutes to like stitch me up and everything. And they take you out to recovery, but I don't know, just it's all quite a blur, but also quite clear. And again, so fortunate. We took a video of the first time that Finn came and got put on me. So my request was to have skin to skin as soon as possible. So he'd had his little health checks and I could hear my obstetrician. She's saying, come on, you know, we've got to get her skin to skin. And it was really lovely to have my wishes respected. And, you know, I always said whatever he needed health-wise, obviously that would come first. But if I could have what I wanted, of course it would be to have him as quickly as possible and have that moment of skin to skin. And so, you know, they wrapped him up and put him on me and put his little face so it was on my chest, and I didn't have my arms available at that time, so they had to hold him up. And just the emotion, crying, and in the video I'm just saying, I love you so much. And watching the video now, it makes me cry every time. I loved him. I can't believe that I had that love. Like, it shocked me and it surprised me how deeply I felt for him straight away. And I said earlier in this podcast, it's not the case for everybody. A bond, and it was something I struggled with during the pregnancy. Sometimes people would say, you know, as soon as you see him, or as soon as you see your baby, it will all be worth it. And you'll love them right away, you know, not like that, just it will all be worth it and you'll love them. And, you know, as soon as they're out. And I think that's setting people up for unrealistic expectations. So I was very aware, and I had a few people be quite honest and lovely to me and told me that wasn't necessarily always the case, that it can take time to bond. So if that's for you, don't beat yourself up. And yeah, but that wasn't me. It was deep, deep, true love. And that's an experience you rarely get. That day just felt like that day went forever in the best kind of way. And I'd made the plan of not having people come to the hospital, which I'm really glad we honored and we stayed true to. We just got to had that day. You know, I didn't know how I was going to come out of surgery or how I was going to feel. We said we'd always tell family straight away, because we knew they'd be worried, and there were a sort of select group of friends that I wanted to tell soonish. And that's the thing. And I didn't tell people the date. I was really strict about that, actually. That was, again, a hypnobirthing tip, was don't tell people the date. The due date is such a, you know, something like crazy. Some very minimal percentage of babies actually come on their due date. And it's a lot of pressure and, you know, of people asking, checking in and building up, and you're trying to grasp this massive thing that's about to happen. So, you know, words of wisdom to anyone who's thinking about it in the future, try not to tell your due date and keep that to yourself. Keep some things to yourself. It's really nice to have that, and have some boundaries around how you want your time to be. So I'm really, really thankful that we had that, and it was lovely to have the family come the next day. But I know some families even say no people at the hospital. Again, you just don't know how you're going to be. So it's okay to change those plans as well if you feel good. But like, as soon as I had him on my chest, as soon as I was being wheeled out of recovery, I was like, I want everybody to meet him and I love him so much and I want to share him with the world. And but I tried to stay strong, and actually had a rule of not a rule, but I decided I wasn't going to share on social media until we were out of hospital, just so that we were in the clear. And I think that really helped as well, just being able to share in that little family, friends, close people bubble, and really just recover and focus on what I needed and what Finn needed in those early days. So, as I said, the first day of Finn's life was absolutely beautiful. For me, I have thoroughly enjoyed my time with him. I have thoroughly enjoyed being a mum. I love him so much, and I'm not shy about saying that, and I'm totally biased. He's absolutely adorable and gorgeous, and just has always been from day one, such a content little boy. And that's what the word that just keeps coming up, even in the hospital, people would say, so content. He wants for nothing, but he just yeah, just really content in himself, not a big crier, and yeah, even from the first night didn't cry a lot. But he's also, people have said he's been here before. He's a wise, like, you know, he's been here before. He's got a little wise side to him, very curious about the world, very intent. Yeah, it's fascinating getting to know them. Like, I felt like I knew him pretty quickly, but, you know, there's just, you just get to know them more and more, and as his little personality develops, it's so wonderful. But we ended up spending 6 days in hospital. I will fast forward a little bit. I always knew this one would be a long one. You know, we spent 6 days in hospital, and I would just walk past his crib sometimes and cry. Like, I know there's hormones involved and stuff, but I just loved him so much. You know, I'd say, he's so beautiful, I love him so much. And I'm glad I didn't put things out there too early, because we actually had a few challenges. And the first challenge was Finn had jaundice, which is quite common, but regardless of it being common, it was the first time for me experiencing it. And to see your child, or to have your child be sick, or have something wrong with them, is so upsetting. And it was on the third day that his jaundice sort of became a problem, and they took him to special care. And for 24 hours, they were going to have him under the blue lights. And, you know, it's quite common, people have had that, but to experience it for yourself, and to have my, to have had this little baby, to be just getting to know him, to be holding him, cuddling him, and being with him as much as I wanted to be, to have him in this blue light, where he had to be in there for 4 hours, three hours at a time, and then he got to come out for feed, a change, and then he had to go back in. So, and they really encouraged us not to, they encouraged us to rest during that time, but I chose to. Oh, there's so much to say. I chose to exclusively express. So I didn't want to boob feed. So I did breastfeed, but I expressed breast milk to a bottle, and Finn had that. Again, it was an anxiety thing for me. I just, before, when I was pregnant, I was just, my head was just screaming, I don't want to, I don't want to, I don't want to. I so respect women who choose to breastfeed, and I understand that, you know, we have breasts and we make milk, and that's how babies eat, but it's not always possible for women to do it, but it's also not as easy as they make it out, or as natural as they make it out to be. It still takes work, it still takes the mother and the baby connecting and it working for both of them, and there's a multitude of reasons why sometimes it doesn't work. But for me, it was mentally, I just couldn't get my hand around it. I didn't want to. And after struggling so much with pregnancy, and I read a great book called What No One Tells You, a book about the emotional and psychological side of pregnancy and birth and motherhood, a brilliant book, highly recommend. I'll put it in the show notes. But that talks about matrescence. It's the journey a woman goes through from woman to mother, and it's like, think about it as like adolescence, like what we understand teenagers to go through. It's what a woman goes through when she's transitioning to being a mother, and it's not just birth, the pregnancy and the birth, it can be over years. Anyway, I'm in this wonderful group, the Motherhood Gathering, run by Belinda Hahn, and learning a lot more about that and having understanding around it has really helped me. But making a choice that worked for me and worked for my family and worked for my, you know, child. So that's why I chose to express. So back to the point. Well, Finn was in the special care, I had to continue expressing to keep up my milk supply, and they said it helped to go and see him, but also tried to rest. And there was one night where I couldn't sleep. I'm lying there at 9:30. I knew he was going to be having the feed. The nurses were doing it. I just wanted to be there, but I forced myself to stay. And then, because of the way your milk's coming in, my boobs were hurting. My drugs were due for my surgery, and so I was starting to ache. and I needed the toilet, and I tried to sit up and just I had this like shooting pain into my side of, I guess, where my scar was healing, and I just felt like a hot dagger being stabbed into my side, just trying to get up to get out of bed, and I was crying, and I called the nurse, and I said, like, all this stuff's happening. I was all, you know, full disclosure, like, backed up, you know, because of taking the medicine, and so my tummy was all funny, and it just, you know, your body's trying to recover after growing a human. It just was so much. And she said, look, just go down there and pump, and, you know, probably the emotion will help you. And I went to stand up, and then my hip gave way, and my hip had been a real problem during pregnancy, and I lost it. I just leant over the bed and I just cried. And then I went down to the special care, and I stood in front of Finn's little plastic box thing that he was in. It was like torture seeing him. Had this little mask over his eyes under the blue light, and I just cried and just stood there and pumped and cried, and you know, it was pretty hard. But you know, once he came out of that, so that was really upsetting for me. Once he came back, you know, then Matt was being a bit strange, and I could see that he was struggling a bit. Again, full permission from Matt and encouragement to talk about this, and you know, this is hard. This has been the hardest part. Yeah, Matt was just being really, he seemed really aloof and distant, and just seemed like he didn't want to be there. And you know, it was hard for me. I'm trying to recover, and I can just see it. And he was doing so well with Finn, and just something was like not right, and just, I don't know, it just seemed a bit almost passive aggressive or something, I don't know, but I just wanted to talk about it. And I said to him, and it kept coming across meanly, but I said, maybe you need to go home, maybe you should just go home. You know, it's really hard for me, you know, I was like, I've got the nurses here, but it's really hard for me if you're here and I feel like you don't want to be here. And he got really upset, and I couldn't, he couldn't talk, and I was like, what's going on? And then he ended up telling me that he just, finally it came out, and he said, I don't have a bond. I don't feel connected. And he had a fear that if he went home, that he wouldn't want to come back. And I can honestly say that was one of the scariest and hardest moments of my life, to see Matt upset and hurting, and then to, the thing that went through my brain was that he's going to leave. I'm, you know, Finn's little life flashed before my eyes. You know, I don't want to do this alone. And I like felt the room spin. I was having a panic attack. I couldn't breathe. I was crying. And I just, it was, you know, I thought he was going to leave me. And he quickly said, no. And you know, said, did he love me? And no, that was not a thing. But yeah, it just shocked me. It shocked me. I've never been shocked like that in my life. Like it didn't, Matt looked great. He looked like he was doing so well. He looked like he loved Finn. I've got photos of him. I've got videos of him holding him, kissing him, caring for him, feeding him, lying next to him, changing his nappy, swaddling him. He was the first one to do those things because I was in the bed the first day. So he was doing all those things and really looked like he was enjoying it. But in the whole time he was struggling. And later on I said, but I'm really confused. Like, you're saying you don't have a bond, but you look so great. And he said, if I look like a dad, if I act like a dad, then I'll feel like a dad. And, you know, I asked him if he was pretending for me, and but he said no, he was pretending for himself. Like, he wanted it. He really wanted it, but he wasn't feeling it. And, look, according to a brochure that we got in a hospital bag that was, like, all full of, you know, samples and things and brochures and things about babies. You know, the most powerful and amazing brochure I've ever seen that should be handed to, I really advocate for this, should be handed to new parents into their hand and said, look, have a read of this and we'll talk to you about it as well. It was from the Gidget Foundation of Australia, which is a foundation that's set up for new parents to support them with their mental health. And it said in it that 1 in 5 women will experience postnatal or perinatal depression, which is perinatal during the pregnancy, birth, early parenting stage, and 1 in 10 men. 1 in 10 men, like, I didn't know that. And I, like I said, I was so prepared for me. I was so prepared for my struggle and potentially to have postnatal, but I never, ever expected it to be Matt. I never expected him to struggle. And we were not prepared for it. And, you know, I'm trying to care for this new little human and I'm also deeply concerned for my husband. So we, you know, knowing that was hard, but we still kept going on. It was good to talk about it. And I actually, my psychologist reached out to me and I ended up talking to her, having a phone call in the hospital, which really helped. And we were honest with our families about just, you know, that Matt needed some help. And he went home for a day and he really hated the hospital and the hospital felt really terrible to him. For me, the hospital was helpful. Yeah, so he went home and he came back like a new man. It was great. He was, yeah, it was good for him to have the time at home and to reset and to come back. And then we did go home from the hospital on the 6th day. I think the breaking point for Matt was that we had to stay in another day for me. I thought we'd have to stay in another day for Finn or I never really thought it was going to be 5 days. But Matt had like 5 days, 5 days, 5 days. And when he found out we had to stay, like it just kind of broke him. And, you know, but like I said, for me, the hospital was a caring place. It helped me. And, you know, I had the support from the nurses with, you know, learning how to be a parent and mum. So we went home and that was a really tough day. Like really, Matt was still struggling a lot. I was super hormonal, super exhausted already, you know, just, I think that's something that's not taught. We just had this fight. Like, I have not screamed. And I punched a wall. I hit a wall. I screamed. I've not felt that rage and that fury and that just uncontrollable, emotion since I was a teenager. And that's where we, again, saying the matrescence, like adolescence. It just takes over you and you're being pushed to your extremes, you know, and to actually to have this little person who's just completely reliant upon you. And I had no problem with caring for him, like doing things for him, but trying to get two people to work together and two people to navigate a life change. And I'm talking about the adults, the parents, whilst also, you know, running on little sleep and then trying to care for this little person. And you're just learning minute by minute. And Finn was such a good sleeper. He didn't cry much. His needs were pretty easily met. He took the bottle really well. He fed really well. You know, he's our blessing was that he has been, and, you know, someone said to me, there's no such thing as an easy baby, but he's been an easier baby. And I always thought that the baby would be the hard part. But in all honesty, that my relationship and navigating relationships, family and friends, family, you know, grandparents and aunts and uncles and when you see people and how much they see and what you share and all that sort of stuff, that stuff is navigating that, the mental load of navigating that, that's hard for me. That's been hard for me. But my relationship with my husband has been the hardest, and seeing my husband struggle mentally has been so hard for me. I'm fortunate that he trusts me to share with me and to tell me what's going on. I'm fortunate that having had the experience of depression and anxiety myself, I have, and having had, you know, quite a bit of psychological support, counselling, psychology support over the years. I have language around it. Like, obviously, I'm not the one who could help him, and I said that to him, and I said straight away, you need professional help. I love you. I support you, and I'm here for you, but I can't, you know, I can't help you in that way. I can be here for you, but, you know, also doing this massive thing. So what broke us again, and this has been a longer episode than I planned it to be, so if you're still with me, thank you, thank you. This is a pretty big deal, so thank you, even if you have to listen in two parts. But, yeah, we had to go back to hospital. We found out one day after being out, one day we got out at lunchtime, and then the day after we had to, at 9 o'clock at night, we got a phone call. Finn's jaundice levels were still high. We'd had a blood test that day, and they wanted us to come back in. We had to go to the pediatric unit, and we said, can't we come another day, tomorrow? And they said, no, we need you to come now. And so we had luckily only half unpacked, packed up the hospital bag again, and, you know, I was lying on the bed crying. I called my mum, like, they're taking my baby away. They're taking my baby from me. And just because of what happened with the special care where he had to be away from me, I just pictured again having to be in the hospital room and then go down the hall and go into a special area, and it's all very sterile and very clinical, and, you know, having to be kept away from him and just being able to touch him through a glass box. Like, it was just heartbreaking for me, and I know that it's not the end of the world, and I know that other people have been through more stuff, but for me in that moment it was awful. And to add on top of it, then Matthew said, only one of us can stay. And I just couldn't cope. And so when we got in there, I begged them to let Matt stay. I begged them to somehow, you know, I said, I can't do this without him. And so they said yes, and they helped us. But, you know, actually quickly after being in there, I felt okay. And I'd even thought earlier in the day, you know, Matt and I had a huge fight, both just crying and broken and didn't know how this was going to work. I thought, you know, maybe I just want to go back to hospital. Maybe hospital's better. Like, and so to be back there, it was like, oh yeah, this is the helping place. They can help us. You know, Finn can be taken care of and I can rest, and yeah, you know. So that felt good to me. But Matt just didn't look good, and he was, as soon as we got in there, he curled up on the bed. Like, it was late. We were ready to go to bed. Finn was almost ready to go to bed. And he was just crying, and then we tried to, you know, trying to feed Finn, and he just wasn't, I could just see he just wasn't coping, and I had calmed down by then. So I took Finn and I asked the nurses to hold him, and they were so wonderful and helpful. And I just said to Matt, you know, you're not okay. This is not okay, and you can't be here. I had been lying on the bed a few minutes before, with my husband on one side of me and my baby on the other, feeling like I had to choose, feeling like I could only help one of them. That was an awful feeling. And so, you know, I said to Matt, you know, you have to get help, and you have to help yourself. And I'm here for you. I care for you. I love you, but I care about you, but I can't care for you. Finn needs me at the moment, and, well, needs me always, but Finn needs me, and I have to be here with him, and the nurses will take care of me, but you have to go and take care of yourself. And so I begged him to go home, because he didn't want to leave me, and that's so loving and it's so lovely and such a testament to his loyalty and love for me, which I so appreciate. I'm so grateful for. But in that moment, he had to care for himself. And so, you know, it was midnight by now. We called his lovely dad, came and got him. And, you know, we were all just so emotional and so hard to know that Finn was potentially not well either. You know, even if it is jaundice, it's still something, you know, baby's still in hospital. And he went home and, you know, was, and then would come back just for visits. But he wasn't coping. And he says that too, and he didn't feel a connection, and he just was struggling, and he felt bad for not having a connection, and he felt bad for not he wanted to be there for me, but he didn't really feel much for our baby. And that was heartbreaking to him, and it was heartbreaking to me, and it's really hard. And it is common, and a lot of people wouldn't talk about it, but we want to talk about it because we don't want other people to feel alone. I don't want other people to have to go, well, they will go through this, but I want people to know that there's support. The Gidget Foundation are amazing. Beyond Blue, Are You Okay? There's ways to seek help. Fortunately, we had an amazing pediatrician, a male pediatrician, who spoke to Matt really openly and honestly about his own experience with having his kids, and just normalized it for him and said, you know, yeah, it's hard to have a connection, and, you know, it's a big change, and it might take time, and that it had taken him 9 months with his kids, and this is a guy who works with children, babies. You know, we got straight onto my GP. The GP did a mental health plan, which was really important, and Matt was able to see a psychologist pretty quickly and to start working on it, and I'm really proud of him. He also reached out to some mates who were due to have kids pretty soon and just shared with them really openly about what he'd experienced and hoped that they didn't feel the same, but just to warn them that maybe that was a possibility, and if you didn't feel that way, that was okay. And I was really proud of him for doing that. And he told some more of his mates who have kids and just asked for help. And that's really important. But it's one of those things with mental health. It's just not a quick fix. He's been to see the psychologist a couple of times, and we've been to see a marriage counselor as well. We're doing really well. But it's just communication and just trying to keep a little baby human alive, and take care of yourselves as well. It just takes a lot, and it's such a big change, and there's so much, you know, and you're tired. It's just a lot of stuff going on. And I think I really wish that every new parent couple would go and see a counselor, a psychologist. We went to see a marriage counsellor before when I was pregnant as well, just because I was very aware of the change and wanted us to be on the same page. And, you know, I think that helped with some things, but, you know, it's just communication. Communication helps everything. And being able to talk about how you're feeling and talk about what you need and take the space that you need. And honestly, probably around 10 weeks, Matt really felt a connection. And now he loves Finn. He loves him so much. He says it all the time. You can see how beautiful he is with him. And he's, you know, and he always was incredible with Finn. He always was being an incredible dad, but he didn't feel it. And he had expectations of himself, and that makes it hard. And it made it hard for me as well, honestly. I have said before many times, I didn't want to be a mum necessarily. I wanted a family. And I wanted a family with Matt. And, you know, sometimes it felt like in those earlier months that, you know, and he's only 5 months old now, but in those earlier weeks and those first few months, like, I had the most beautiful relationship with Finn, and I had these amazing moments, and I just adored my time with him. But I wasn't able to share it, and Matt wasn't able to join in with me because he wasn't feeling it. And I feel sad about that. I feel sad for me. I feel sad for him. You know, I feel sad for, yeah, I guess I had that view and picture of what it would be like. And we're getting that now. We're getting, you know, we cuddle and have mornings in bed, and we cuddle all together. And, you know, Finn does something funny and we laugh and, you know, learn something, and we get to talk about it and share it. And sharing that joy, sharing this experience is really important. So that's been a very long story about my birth. the birth of Finn William Quick. But what I really wanted to highlight as well was, that, you know, this is just a huge life change. And for anyone who's been through it and anyone who's going to go through it, you know, it's not easy. Different things are difficult for different people. I don't think nobody could say it's not hard. It's hard. It's hard in different ways, though. And for me, it was hard. Our relationship has been a challenge. And, you know, and seeing my husband be in pain and be in struggle and knowing what that feels like, knowing what it's like to be depressed and to go to that place. So that's been hard. And I just want to say to anyone who's been there before, I see you, I hear you, I feel you. If you're going through something now and you want to reach out, please say hi. But, you know, obviously, of course, first and foremost, if you're in struggle, do reach out for support. Beyond Blue, Lifeline, you know, in particular for if it is around pregnancy and parenthood, the Gidget Foundation is fantastic. So thank you for listening. I will continue to share about our journey. I'll be sharing some more writings about mental health and perinatal depression for men. I'm really proud of Matt for being willing to share his story and being so open about it. I love him. I love him for that. And, you know, I love him anyway, but, you know, he, you know, and his want to do better and his want to feel better and his want to have that relationship with his son. And, you know, that takes work. It all takes work. So we keep working on ourselves and, keep checking in. So, that is it for today. Please reach out. You can contact on the Lovely Travels community on Facebook. You can follow the Facebook page, Lovely Travels. Send us a message on Instagram or, you know, go and see some photos. I'll be sharing some pretty cute photos this week of Finn and my family. So that's at Lovely Travels Instagram. And then the website, which is www.lovelytravels.com, or email us. You might want to email them privately and share your own experience. I'd love to hear your story, and I hope that me sharing our journey has helped you in some way. It's okay to not be okay, and it's okay to have hard times, and we can do hard things, as Glennon Doyle says. So take care of yourselves. Be kind to yourself. I'm saying that over and over to myself as well. And thank you for listening.